A Crawford's death not by poison, say doctor experts. The Atlanta Journal, Monday, the 1st of December, 1913, page 1, column 2. Dr. Hurt testifies, patient was given morphine injections by his order, and this might have left traces. Dr. J.W. Hurt, county physician, who attended the late Joshua B. Crawford, said on the witness stand in the civil litigation over the Crawford estate Monday, it was his positive opinion that Crawford died of pneumonia and not from poison administered by Mrs. Mary Bell Crawford or anyone else. The physician swore he did not believe it possible for him to have mistaken the cause of Crawford S. death, and further asserted that the symptoms of morphia poisoning are directly opposite those in pneumonia cases. A trained nurse who was in charge of Crawford corroborated the physician S. statement. A chemist, qualifying as an expert, declared that he had read all of the testimony of Dr. H. Harris, upon which the prosecution of Mrs. Crawford relies, and that there was no basis in the facts as given by Dr. Harris himself for the opinion that morphine poisoning caused Crawford S. death. The testimony of the witnesses was heard before James L. Anderson, as auditor in the litigation over the $250,000 estate left by the deceased. This hearing, which commenced in April, was resumed Monday morning after a postponement of several months, and Auditor Anderson expects it to be completed within the next 2 weeks. Murder charge involved. The testimony of every witness heard Monday morning bore directly on the charge of murder, which has become entangled in the civil litigation since Dr. H.F. Harris exhumed the body of Crawford on June 13th this year, reported he had found morphine and meconic acid in the stomach, and gave it as his opinion that Crawford was poisoned. It is on the witnesses heard Monday that attorneys Reuben R. Arnold and Burton Smith, who represent the widow, will depend to clear her of the murder charge, which was brought on warrants sworn out in a justice court by relatives of Crawford, seeking to wrest the fortune from her. Continued on page 7, Colonel 2. Page 7, column 2, Crawford, S. death not by poison, say two doctor experts. Continued from page 1. Dr. Hurt threw a bombshell into the camp of the Crawford claimants when he testified that for several days prior to Crawford S. death, he had been giving the patient a certain cough medicine, which contained morphine and other narcotics. Also, he testified that he had left instructions for the trained nurse, Miss M. Townsend, to give the patient morphine hypodermic injections when they were needed, and she declared that she gave Crawford an injection a few hours before his death. She stated also that she gave him a dose of the cough medicine about 4 hours before he died. Poisons accounted for. Dr. Hurt testified that in his opinion, there was enough meconic acid and morphine in the hypodermic and the cough medicine to account for the poison found by Dr. Harris in his examination. The physician was positive in his statement that he could not be mistaken in the cause of death. When a patient dies from the effects of morphine, he pointed out, the pupils of the eyes contract, and just before death, the breathing is very slow. In pneumonia cases, it is just the opposite. The pupils of the eyes dilate, he says, and the patient breaths rapidly. The interrogatories of Dr. J.M. McCandless were read Monday, and he stated that from the facts as recited by Dr. Harris, that he saw no basis for the latter S conclusion that Crawford died of morphine poisoning. He also gave Dr. Harris the record for finding traces of morphine. He had never heard of morphine traces being found in a body more than 14 months after death. In the Crawford case, Dr. Harris did not exhume the body until more than 3 years after death. Traces lost long time. Dr. McCandless also testified that while traces of morphine rapidly disappear from the stomach when the patient is in life, that they remain for an indefinite period if taken only a short time before death. It is expected that before the civil litigation, before the auditor is concluded, that the grand jury will act on the murder charge against Mrs. Crawford. Attorney John Y. Smith has been named Special Solicitor General to conduct the prosecution, and he expects to have the case ready for the grand jury in a few days. He is being assisted by Attorney J.S. James and Albert Kemper, who represents the heir in the civil case. J.B. Crawford died on March 29, 1909, only a few weeks after his marriage to the woman who is now charged with murdering him. Fred Lamb, a New York barber, is charged with being an accessory before the fact of the alleged murder, it being alleged that he conspired with Mrs. Crawford to kill her aged and wealthy husband, that they might benefit from the estate. page 1, column 4. Marine officer under arrest. Page 1, column 7, Captain Ernest West held for attack on mother-in-law. Accused of beating Mrs. John H. Jones, who is reported seriously injured. Her son makes charges, alleged attack follows Mrs. West. S. Divorce suit officer S. attempt to recover child from Cortland Street home, brings on quarrel, he denies charges. Captain Ernest E. West of the Marine Corps was placed under arrest Monday afternoon and lodged at police headquarters, charged with an attack on Mrs. John H. Jones, his mother-in-law. Later during the afternoon, John H. Jones drew a warrant in Judge J.B. Ridley S. Court, charging West with assault with intent to murder. Mr. Jones, with his attorney James A. Branch, then held a conference with Chief Beavers, and it was decided to enter charges of drunk and disorderly conduct in the Recorder S. Court, in addition to the felony charge in the Justice Court. Mrs. Jones, the wife of the deputy clerk of the Superior Court, is thought to be seriously hurt, and physicians in attendance at 2 o'clock had not been able to determine the extent of her injuries. It is charged by Mr. Jones and also by Edward C. Jones, a brother of Mrs. West, that Captain West drew a knife on Mrs. Jones, knocked her to the floor, and then kicked her. Her ankle is badly injured and possibly broken, and her relatives charge that this injury resulted from a kick. Follows divorce suit. Mrs. Mary West, wife of the Marine officer, who was formerly a professor at the boys' high school and also at the Georgia School of Technology, separated from him about a year and several months ago entered suit for divorce. After a habeas corpus hearing before Judge W.D. Ellis, she obtained the custody of their 8-year-old son. Recently, Captain West returned to Atlanta from his station on the Pacific Coast and brought a new habeas corpus petition, asking that he be allowed the control of the child for a period of 2 months while he is on leave of absence. The case has been set for trial several times, but postponed, and is now set for a hearing on next Monday. Mrs. West and the child have been living with her parents at 485 Cortland Street since the separation. Shortly after 11 o'clock, according to Mr. Jones, Captain West drove up to the residence in an automobile and announced that he was going to get his child. Refused him his child. Mrs. Jones, who met him at the door, stood at the foot of the stairs and refused to allow West to go up to the boy who was with his mother. Then, according to Mr. Jones, West drew a knife and threatened her. When she refused to allow him to mount the stairs, he is alleged to have pushed her down and then kicked her and tried to go up the steps. While there was not a man in the Jones residence, Mrs. Jones screamed so loudly that neighbors came running into the house, according to Mr. Jones. Then, he says, Captain West fled from the house and jumping into the waiting automobile was driven rapidly away. Mr. Jones states that he had been expecting trouble with the Captain West and remained at the residence until he received an imperative telephone call and left for his office. When he reached his office, he heard of the alleged visit of Captain West. Police called in. Mr. Jones returned home and immediately called for the police. Patrolman J.W. West answered, and after an investigation, it was learned from the chauffeur that Captain West had gone to his rooms in a local club. Two detectives went there immediately and found that the Marine officer had gone to bed. They had him dressed and then took him in a taxicab to police headquarters. When asked his name, he answered Walters. All right, Captain West, answered the desk sergeant. West then gave his address as the Atlanta Sanitarium. A little later, he admitted his identity to reporters, but denied emphatically that he had seen Mrs. Jones during the day. During the habeas corpus hearing, Mrs. West had charged that her husband was a habitual drunkard, and West admitted having used considerable whiskey, but he then asserted that he had stopped drinking completely. Mrs. West asserted in the court that she left her husband after she had him placed under arrest by his commanding officer for abusing her. Page 16, column 1. Georgia Corn Show will open in Atlanta Tuesday. Parade Thursday will feature exhibition to be held in Capitol Corn, banked up on tables thickly covering the entire lower floor of the state capitol and part of the second floor, with exhibits from 28 girls canning clubs completely filling the wing at the Washington Street entrance, is the interesting sight that greeted visitors to the statehouse today. The 3,000 Corn Club exhibits from more than 100 Georgia counties are being put in place under the direction of Chairman H.G. Hastings of the Corn Show Committee of the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, and by night, the show will be ready for tomorrow's opening. Mr. Hastings has supplied a special crew of his own men in charge of Roland L. Lyon to place the exhibits, and an attractive and advantageous arrangement has been secured. Reports to the Chamber of Commerce from 100 countless show that 944 Corn Club boys are coming to Atlanta Tuesday and Wednesday. It is estimated that approximately 160 of these will visit Atlanta relatives, leaving 784 to be provided for. Homes have already been secured for 700 of these, and it is anticipated that the returns of cards from the high schools and from the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades of the grammar schools will more than take care of the surplus. In addition to the features of the program heretofore announced, there will be special exercises in the hall of the House of Representatives at 10 o'clock Thursday morning, December 4th, for the visiting boys and girls. President Wilmer L. Moore of the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce will preside, and interesting addresses will be delivered by Chancellor David C. Barrow of the State University, J. Phil Campbell, representing the United States Department of Agriculture, M. L. Britton, State Superintendent of Schools, and Dr. A. M. Soule, President of State College of Agriculture, who will deliver the diplomas from that institution to all the boys who have a record this year of 100 bushels or more. J.D. Price, Commissioner of Agriculture, will address the boys at the Grand Opera House Wednesday evening. Free picture shows. Three of Atlanta's leading moving picture shows have opened their doors free of charge to the Corn Club boys during their stay in the city. The boys will be admitted on their Corn Club buttons to the Vaudette, on Whitehall, near Hunter Street, at any hour of the day, while they will be admitted on their buttons to the Savoy and Alcazar, on Peachtree Street, between the hours of 10 and 1 o'clock. A special Bureau of Information will be established at the Capitol, near the Washington Street entrance, and all the Corn Club boys arriving in the city are requested to report there. Cards of introduction to the hostesses who are to entertain the boys will be given to the Corn Club agents and country school superintendents in charge of them, and information will be furnished as to the streetcars to be taken. There are more than twice as many exhibits by the girls' canning clubs this year than last. Miss Mary E. Cresswell, in charge of this work, is busy placing exhibits from 28 counties, each representing a different club. While there will be 20 individual exhibits made by the girls who have done the best work in their respective countries, probably the most remarkable showing made by any of the girls this year is that of Clyde Sullivan of Owsley, Lowndes County, 14 years old. Little Miss Sullivan cultivated her 1/10 of an acre in tomatoes, from which she put up more than 2,000 number 2 cans, which she sold to a turpentine commissary near her home for $227. Her expenses were $96, in which she included her own time at 10 cents an hour, so that her net profit, after paying herself for her work, was $131. Undaunted B. Drouth. Undaunted by an early spring drought, little Miss Sullivan carried bucket after bucket of water every night for weeks and poured it on her young tomato plants, so that they finally yielded her a bountiful harvest. Her exhibit for the state fair was so hurriedly prepared that it was not in the best of shape when set up in Macon. She noticed this, and when her exhibit came for the corn show, every package was as neatly and carefully packaged as if it had come from a canning factory. Another splendid showing is made by Aaron Dooley, 12 years old, of Oconee County, who put up this year 1,450 number 3 cans of tomatoes, on which her profit was more than $100, or nearly double what she did last year. One of the girls in Jenkins County, whose name Miss Creswell could not recall, picked all the worms off her tomatoes in the spring and sold them to fishermen as bait for enough to pay for all the fertilizers she sued. There will be at least 40 of the Canning Club girls here for the corn show, and through the kindness of A.L. Belle Isle, provision has been made for them to take part in Thursday's parade. Seats will be placed on his big truck, and they will ride in the parade at the head of the Corn Club boys. Frank Harrell, lessee of the Winecoff Hotel, has notified the Chamber of Commerce that he will provide rooms at his hotel for 20 of the Corn Club boys who will visit Atlanta during the show. Formal parade order issued by Grand Marshal Nash, Adjutant General J. Van Holt Nash, who is the Grand Marshal for the Boys' Corn Club Parade, has issued the following orders. Atlanta, Ga, Decor 1, 1913. Officials' orders for the Georgia Boys' Corn Club Parade, Thursday, December 4th. General Orders Number 1-1. At the request of the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, the undersigned hereby assumes command of the Georgia Corn Club Parade on Thursday afternoon, December 4th, 1913, as Grand Marshal. The following orders are published for the information of all concerned. 2. Captain Arthur McCollum, Quartermaster Corps, National Guard of Georgia, is hereby appointed Chief of Staff. 3. Uniform to be worn is discretionary with the commanding officer of each organization. Formation. 4. The parade will form at the Auditorium Armory, Corner Cortland and Gilmer Streets, at 2:30 o'clock in the following order. Mounted Police, under command of Chief J.L. Beavers, will form on east side of Cortland Street, right resting on Gilmer Street, facing Grand Marshal, General J. Van Holt Nash, and staff, and the commanding officer 1st Division, General R.K. Evans, USA, and staff, will form on the west side of Cortland Street, right resting on Gilmer Street, facing east. 5th Infantry, NG Georgia, under command of Lieutenant Colonel O.H. Hall, will form on the north side of Gilmer Street, right resting on Cortland Street, facing south. Marist College Cadets, under command of Major E.R. Schmidt, will form on the south side of Gilmer Street, right resting on Cortland Street, facing north. Georgia Military Academy Cadets, under command of Colonel J.C. Woodward, will form on the south side of Gilmer Street, right resting on the left of the Marist College Cadets, facing north. Patterson S. Horse Ambulance will take its place on Gilmer Street, on the immediate left of the Georgia Military Academy Cadets. The commanding officer, 2nd Division, Honorable William M. Slayton, and staff will form on the west side of the Washington Street Viaduct, right resting on East Hunter Street, facing east. Members of Atlanta S. Board of Education will be in this division. The Boy Scouts, under command of Scoutmaster E.G. Everett, will form in column of fours on the west side of Washington Street Viaduct, immediately on the left of the commander of the 2nd Division, facing south. The Georgia Corn Club Boys, under command of J. Phil Campbell, will form on the west side of Washington Street Viaduct, in columns of fours, immediately in rear of the Boy Scouts, facing south. The Atlanta Schoolboys will form on the west side of Washington Street Viaduct, in column of fours, immediately in rear of the Georgia Corn Club Boys, facing south. Patterson S. Automobile Ambulance will take its place on East Hunter Street at the corner of Cortland Street, facing west. Automobiles, carriages, floats, etc., containing members of the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce and the Mayor and City Council and other participants, will take their places on East Hunter Street, immediately in rear of Patterson S. Ambulance, facing west. Line of March, 5, Washington Street, Mitchell, Whitehall, Peachtree, Houston, Ivy, Gilmer, Washington Street Viaduct to State Capitol, where each division commander will disband his organization. Order of Parade. 6. The parade will march from the Auditorium Armory promptly at 3 p.m. in the following order. 1. Mounted Police. 2. Grand Marshal and Staff. 3. Commanding Officer 1st Division and Staff. 4. 5th Infantry, NG Georgia. 5. Marist College Cadets. 6. Georgia Military Academy Cadets, 7. Patterson S. Ambulance, 8. Commanding Officer 2nd Division and Staff, 9. Boy Scouts, 10. Georgia Corn Club Boys, 11. Atlanta School Boys, 12. Patterson S. Ambulance, 13. Automobiles, carriages, etc. J. Van Holt Nash, Grand Marshal Official. Arthur M. Collum, Chief of Staff.